Hello, would you please state your name, the date, the time, and your location?
My name is Jacqueline Casimir. It's September the 22nd, 4:01 p.m., Columbus, Ohio.
And do you consent to having this interview recorded, digitally uploaded, and publicly released under a Creative Commons license attribution, non-commercial share alike?
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here with me today. Could you just start by introducing yourself to anyone who might find themselves listening?
My name is Jackie Casimir. I am Adult Division Director of Mothers of Murdered Columbus Children. Hence, I am a mother of a murdered Columbus child.
Would you tell me a story about your life during the pandemic?
My life during the pandemic? Well, like everybody else, I was thrown into chaos. I was had surgery, had a pretty major surgery the end of December of 2019. Returned to work after my surgery September, I mean, sorry, March 17th, and was sent back home that same day. Later in that year, September of that year, my son was murdered. So not only was I thrown in chaos with the pandemic, the isolation of work from home, and the grieving of my son.
Would you
I
tell me?
am now,
Oh,
I'm sorry.
please continue.
And at that point, I became an activist to keep from becoming a statistic.
Would you tell me a bit about who your son was?
My son was born September 23rd. His name was Cornelius Ray Casimir. He was a very giving person. He loved to give back to my son was the type of young man that if we was and this has happened, we was riding through the neighborhood and there was a older lady struggling to get her groceries in the house. And he said, "Pull over, mom. I need to help her." And that's for the most part how he lived his life. He was a lifeguard in the Columbus public pool system for over 10 years. He worked in the rec centers. He was daycare transportator. He took kids from school to daycare. He was a father of two. Like most black men, young black men, he struggled with getting his footing under him. He made some bad choices in his life. He was the avid gun collector. He went and got his license to conceal and carry. He really enjoyed going to the range with his friends. He influenced quite a few of his friends to do the same so that they would not face consequences of wanting to enjoy whatever it is that guns give men or people that enjoy shooting guns. And he really enjoyed going to the range to shoot his guns. And it ultimately is what caused his death. He was killed and robbed for a gun.
Do you remember when you first heard about COVID-19?
I'm sorry?
Do you remember when you first heard about COVID-19?
Yeah, I was home recovering from surgery. Earlier before there was such a thing, my daughter and her family, her husband and her three kids got really, really sick. Particularly her youngest, who suffered asthma. They diagnosed him with some form of pneumonia. We didn't know it then, and we still have not got confirmation, but I believe they had, was one of the first people who had COVID. She did work in she does work in the Columbus Public School System. So yes, I was at home watching the news, flabbergasted.
What were some of your early impressions?
Initially, I felt that it was introduced into the system by the government to control population. But as more information came available and I did my research, I came to believe that it indeed was an infection that was not introduced into the population by the government. And I just, it's horrendous.
Would you tell me more about that research?
You go to reliable sources. I did a lot on the CDC website. If I saw a post about something, I would go and confirm or demise what's being said. Like everyone else, I was confused. I was willing to get the vaccination. Once I discovered the coronavirus itself, has already been in our society. It's the virus that causes the common cold. So it wasn't a big jump for me that had muted into something else. And when it came about time for the vaccination, I wasn't so confused that they had came up with one so quickly, because I know it's something that they've been researching for years, how to cure the common cold.
To the extent that you're comfortable sharing, would you say something about your experiences of health and healthcare infrastructure pre-pandemic?
About my health? Well, I was a smoker. At the time where I quit smoking, I had been smoking well over 20 years. I started smoking very young. As a result of my smoking, I was in and out of the hospital several times a year for several days at a time due to asthma / COPD. I was able to quit smoking. I still have asthma. I also suffer from depression and anxiety. Otherwise, I'm relatively healthy. I don't have any high blood pressure or diabetes or high cholesterol. I don't suffer any of those illnesses. So I'm grateful for those. And with me quitting smoking and getting better lung strength, I was able to avoid dying from the two infections of COVID I've personally had. I believe that in my soul. With the vaccination.
Staying in the pre-pandemic world, what was your day-to-day looking like?
Work, home. Spending time with family and friends on the weekend. Concerned about the state of our communities. Concerned about the state of police relations. Concern about the state of our political things that was happening politically. Just a typical American person, I'm assuming.
And how did day-to-day life change once the pandemic hit and lockdown started?
It was a struggle. I think I was a little, because I had been home for such a long time, upwards of 3 months, recovering from surgery, and I live alone. I think that helped me in the isolation that we had to go into. I was 50 at the time, 54, what's this? I'm 56, 54, 55 at the time. Not the best at electronics, so there's a lot of things I had to learn. I had to learn how to set up my own workstation at home that was shipped from work. I had to learn a new thing called Zoom. I had to deal with the loss of my son in isolation. I had to plan a funeral, an actual funeral. We had tickets that we had to pass out. So I actually had to do a guest list for my son's funeral. It was pretty rough, but I survived.
Would you tell me more about the funeral? What was it like? Who came?
Who came? The funeral was, it was difficult. Mostly close family and friends. As I said, my son was, he was very well known. Had we been able to have a free and open funeral, I'm sure there would have been standing room only. There was a lot of hurt feelings of people who were not able to attend because we just did not have the ticket. If I can remember correctly, I think we were allotted 60 60 guests to attend.
Where did you have it? Was it at a funeral home, a church?
It was at a funeral home. It actually was one of the one of the like it was it was going to in-person funerals had just restarted. Again, that technology of the funeral being streamed, so those who could not attend in person was able to view the whole ceremony online. But it was at a funeral home.
I'd be so grateful if you shared more about your journey into activism after his death.
I guess it's not technically prior to his death. Anytime I ran into like somebody in a sorority or a fraternity, or anybody who I felt had a voice, my concern was, what are you doing about these young men out here killing each other? What are you doing? What are you doing? Like, anybody who would listen, what are you doing? What are you doing? My dear friend, and who was also an educator of my son, had started an organization, Mothers of Murdered Columbus Children. I went to go support her I went to go support her on the Saturday I'll give you the exact date. I went to go support Melissa on Saturday, the 19th of September, 2020, at a what she called her covering on Cleveland Avenue here in Columbus, across the street from Chapel of Peace Funeral Home, as a supporter. That following Thursday, my son was murdered. And probably that next month or so, I was kicked into activism. It's not a pain that any other person should ever suffer. I had a problem with them giving my son a number. He was the 111th homicide of the year. I found a voice that I did not know that I had. I have, because of my past mental health, I knew I couldn't just sit in my grief because I would not have survived. Mm-hmm. So me getting into activism was also selfish. Without it, I probably would not be here today, to be honest. I probably would have committed suicide. I've met some amazing women, men, and children along the way. I think I realized the death of my son is bigger than me.
What are some of the steps you took early on in activism?
Showing up. Just showing up is amazing. When you show up for someone else, it gets you out your headspace. just showing up as some of the, for the first few months or so, just showing up, just being present. And then I gradually moved into more of a mentoring stance. I found myself during lives to encourage other mothers to get up. Just get up for the day, sis. Wash your face, brush your teeth. Just get up today. Prior to my son's death, prior to the pandemic, I was actually getting ready to host a voter registration drive. I had ordered all the voter registration pamphlets, everything I needed. I was hosting a drive because I felt the political climate was at such. These kids, the younger generation, needed to get involved. They needed to understand. I still believe that in my heart. And I even continued at my son's service. I had a voter registration table set up. I think we registered 10 people at my son's funeral. So I think those little things that I see me fussing with folks that I ran into, a random police officer, what are we doing? The voter registration, the showing up that day for Melissa, I think they were all preparing me for what was to be and what is still to be. I'm really new in this journey. Of activism. I have my son's foundation is in the making, which is going to be, it's a little different, it's a lot different from what we do with Mothers of Murder Columbus Children. One of the things I've always said to my son when he made stupid choices and stupid mistakes, driving without license, getting a ticket. He turned 18 and was still in high school and was on suspension from high school and went to another high school and caught a case for trespassing. Just minor irritating things that he would do. And I used to say to him, you're traveling down this road. At the end of the road, you're going to have to make some choices. And the choices is going to be prison, death, or you got to turn around and clean all this shit up out of your way. All the shit that you laid in front behind you, you have to clean up and get to the end, back to the end of the road and start over. And exactly what he was doing. He had got his license reinstated. He had got a nonviolent charge expunged from his account, from his record. He had another little charge on his record that he was working on getting expunged. He started his own foundation. He was super involved in his kid's life. Working. He made sure he kept his insurance. He was very proud. I got insurance on my car, Mom. I got insurance. And this may seem minor to somebody on the outside looking in, but this is major for these young Black men out here to even be able to insure and afford insurance on their car. So his foundation will be C. Ray Casimir Foundation. And I want it to be like a gun buyback type program. You bring me a legitimate gun and we'll help clean up some of this garbage you put in the road for yourself.
How have you kept in touch with friends and family throughout all of this?
Mostly social media. I'm mostly doing social media.
You'd mentioned catching COVID. Would you tell me a bit about what that was like?
My granddaughter, who was 12, 10, 11, somewhere young, when we started lifting restrictions, she had been with me since my son. Since my son passed, she wanted to stay with me. And they started lifting restrictions, and it was able to go roller skating. And she begged, "Mama, please, can we just go roller skating? Please, can we just go roller skating?" And against my better judgment, but knowing that she also was isolated, she was not in contact with her friends. She hadn't been out the house. We went roller skating, and we both contracted COVID. Mine was, I just had what I would call just a early fall cold, not even the flu, just a cold. She was a little more sicker. She lost her taste and she lost her smell and she ran fevers and all of that. And the second encounter that I got from COVID, I'm not sure. We hosted Mothers of Murder Columbus Children. We hosted a holiday extravaganza for the mothers. And shortly after that, I was diagnosed with COVID again. Same symptoms, just like scratchy throat. I kept having to hit my inhaler. But again, it was just for me, thank God, a minor cold symptoms. I've had no lingering long-term effects of it.
What's it been like hosting events during the pandemic?
Initially, it's scary, to be honest, because it's needed. We need to be able to, as mothers mourning, and going through, a lot of us are still going through the court system, no closure. It's needed, but it's scary. Knowing that every time we have a gathering or an event that ourselves and everybody we know and have come to love is exposed, is subject to contracting, is what can be very deadly disease. But it's needed. I have not heard of anyone in our organization or their circle of people who have died from COVID because of a gathering that we've been at. But it is scary. It's scary, but the alternative could very well be that a mother could isolate to the point where she could commit suicide or go so far down the black hole that they can never recover. It's a scary process, but it's a needed one, unfortunately.
What are some of the things that you've noticed about other grieving mothers in the last couple of years?
The one thing that we all have in common is some of the things that I found that we have in common. After the noise is over, the funerals and the initial shock, it gets real lonely. Family and friends start disappearing. Your child's name stops being mentioned. You walk in a room, you feel like the pink elephant. You feel as though people feel that you should be over it. No confirmation on that. Well, people have said it. It's been a year, it's been 2 years, move on. There's no moving on past this. There's no moving on. There's moving forward. There's learning to live this new life. It's isolation, it's confusion, it's anger. It's hard to be joyful.
Did you have much interaction with the court system?
Fortunately, not. In my situation, once he was charged, we immediately made an appointment to go sit down with the prosecutor, because my son is never number 111. My son is Cornelius Ray Casimir. So we went and met our prosecutor. And we had, for me, we only had to go to court 2 times. The first time we went to court, he was released on bail with no repercussions, like just free balling, like, oh, he's just out on bail, no reporting, no drug testing. And we got his bail restricted. And the next interaction in court we had with him, the first interaction, I got out of character pretty bad. The next interaction, he got his bail revoked because he did, he was dirty. He made bail again. And while he was out on bail the second time, he OD'd and died. So I didn't get the justice that I would have liked. I didn't get the apology or the why. But what I see now, now that second year in, and they told me right off the bat, we was looking at 2.5, 3 years of going through this process. And what I'm seeing the other mothers go through, I'm grateful that I don't have to endure that pain. my scab that I'm trying to let grow and heal is not being ripped off every 6 months to a year, 3 to 6 months. I'm not being summoned back to court or continuance. So I am grateful for that.
What does justice look like for you?
For me, there is no justice. I won't ever have justice. I have peace. I don't have justice. There is more people involved in my son's killing. The particular guy that was being charged, he claimed self-defense. So the detective only focused on that aspect of it and not the other people that we know were involved. And I believe they know was involved as well. I guess justice for me, really, at this stage, because me and my family sat down and we had a conversation. We probably could have went back to the Columbus Police Department and demanded them to investigate further. But we chose not to. We chose to let it rest at that point. My son was murdered and upwards of 10 guns was stolen from him. I guess justice for me, if those guns could be recovered and taken off the street. That's probably what justice would look like for me. But reality tells me that's never going to happen.
I'm curious, what does the word health mean to you?
Health?
Yes, ma'am.
H-E-A-L-T-H?
That's the one.
Mental? Mental health is most important to me. Physical ailments are a little more easily cured than mental due to the stigma, the shamefulness of it. So health to me means a good balance mentally, if I have to be 100% honest. Being a sufferer of major depression with suicidal ideology and attempt, and mental health is a bigger challenge. So healthy mental health is that's what healthy means to me. I don't know anybody who's ever committed murder or self-hurt because they have diabetes. But people are hurt and injured and killed daily because of mental health illness. So to me, being healthy, it's having a good mental health balance.
What do you think we would need to change as a society to make it so that we could all have that better mental health balance?
We have to recognize trauma. And we have to deal with the trauma I don't think there's any person that walks this earth has not faced some type of trauma. There's a sector of the population who has trauma daily that's not being dealt with. So recognizing and dealing with the trauma is a good first step. Once we recognize trauma and deal with the trauma, I think the stigma of mental health illness will start to demise. I feel as though there's a tide turning in that area. More people are becoming, what the young kids are calling woke, to the fact that it's okay not to be okay today. And it's okay for me to talk about not being okay today. So I think there's a tide changing. And that's the only way that could continue to change is through education. Education is the key. People have to be told what it looks like, what it feels like, how do we fix it? You're not alone. That to me is key.
What does the word safety mean to you?
What is it?
What does the word safety mean to you?
Safety?
Yes, ma'am.
Safety means being safe from harm, mentally and physically. It means being in a space where it's okay not to be okay and not to be judged for it. Safety for me personally, and I'm there today, being allowed to walk in my grief, but also being aware that I can't stay there. I have to get up. Safety means I can go to the gas station and put gas in my car and not have to worry about somebody who has suffered childhood trauma and neglect to come up to me and cause me harm. Which goes back to mental health.
There's been such a narrow biological focus of safety regarding COVID-19. I'm wondering, under that teeny tiny framework, what are some of the things that you've been doing to keep yourself feeling safer from the virus?
The biggest thing I did was I get vaccinated. I have a medical team and I follow their advice. When my pulmonologist says it's time for a third booster, I'll go get a third booster. I wash my hands. I sanitize. I'm not going to say I'm the best at maintaining a safe distance because in my field that I, my field and my mental health requires hugging. So I'm not the best at maintaining that distance, and or wearing a mask. When the numbers ticked ticks up. I try to be more conscious of wearing a mask and I'm in public places. Covering my mouth when I cough. When I blow my nose, sanitize my hands. If I hear somebody with the cough, distance myself from them. I'm more aware of the people around me, people at my work. But what I refuse to do is live in fear of this virus.
I'd love to hear more about being a hugger and trying to navigate safety with that.
Well, when we're in our space, when we're in our grief, sometimes all we need is a hug. All we just need a hug is, to me, and what I hope that the mothers and anybody who I feel needs a hug, it's a transference of spirit and strength. If you're in a bad, dark place and I can hug you and give you some of what is perceived as my strength and give you a strength to take a next step. That's what a hug does. It's such a small gesture. And of all the things that we could do, it's nourishing. It's transferring of positive strength and energy and comfort. And when you hug somebody and you feel the tension leave their body, it's an amazing feeling.
Has your relationship... Please continue.
When someone hugs me and when I'm in my worst and I feel the tension leave my body, it's an amazing feeling. It's letting someone know they're not alone.
Has your relationship to touch changed over the last couple of years?
No, because yes, because prior to the pandemic and prior to my son's murder, which is one of the same to me, I probably would hug and touch more out of empathy. That's what I'm supposed to do. Like, I'm a hugger. I'm the person who's going to walk up behind you and rub your back. That's always been me. But I think the hug in the rubbing of the back, the meanings behind those or the affection behind those have changed, if that makes any sense.
You'd mentioned getting vaccinated. How did you decide to do that?
That there, I had a conversation with my providers. I'm already get my flu vaccination every year. I know with getting my flu shot every year has done for me because I've been deadly ill with the flu in the past. So I'm old enough to know what everybody in the house has chickenpox looks like. I'm old enough to know what the mumps look like. I know I'm old enough. My kids did not suffer those same childhood illnesses at the same level that we did. So I'm a believer in vaccination. I believe in science. So when I spoke with my providers, particularly my pulmonologist, and he confirmed and assured me that it's safe. It was a no-brainer. Vaccination is a no-brainer to me.
How accessible was the vaccine for you?
Oh, very accessible.
How are you feeling about the immediate future?
That is a loaded question that you're asking me right now because I am in what we call our season. My son's birthday is tomorrow. The anniversary of his death is the next day. So right now, just looks a lot of sadness. But I know that I will find the strength within myself and my family and friends and my sisters that I'll be okay. Not only is tomorrow my son's birthday, I've been elected into a special mentoring upheaving program at work. And tomorrow is what is called, it's one of the big events of the program, be networking. I will be meeting with some very big top executives within the company that I work for. I have to sell myself. I have to be professional, smiling. So, immediate future. Scary as hell for me because I don't I don't know where I'm going to find that strength for tomorrow.
What are some of your hopes? Oh, please continue. Sorry.
No, I wasn't saying anything else.
What are some of your hopes for a longer term future?
Some of my hopes is that tomorrow is amazing. That tomorrow will bring me some, as of this program, some more financial stability. So that I can move forward with my son's foundation. and make changes in the lives that need it the most. So not only is my life depending on success tomorrow, the success of my son's foundation rides on me being successful tomorrow. So when I least think I've got the strength to do what I need to do, it comes. So I'm hoping tomorrow it'll show up. I'm allowing myself to grieve today. I'm trying to get through this, knowing what tomorrow and the next day is. So tomorrow will be successful, which will mean my career path would be successful, which will allow me to move my son's foundation forward. And hit the ground running the first of the year.
When you need support, who do you turn to?
My sisters in the organization.
Could you tell me a story about a moment where you've turned to someone for support?
Oh. See if I can isolate one. So, I just pick up the phone and call, or I do a live. I find a way to let someone know that, hey, I'm in a bad space. And I need some encouraging words. I think I'm it just happens there I don't know. I don't know.
What are some of the things you do to take care of yourself?
I do a lot of lives. Taking care of others, giving my sisters support fills my bucket. When being open and honest, sharing my vulnerability in this process, and not just this process, with my mental health, allowing myself not to be okay. It fills my bucket. Accepting the fact that I am a tool, that things that happens to me, for me, because of me, has very little to do with me. That helps me to to stay mentally healthy. Gives me strength to see another day.
Do you think of COVID-19 as a historic moment, a historic event?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What about it is historic?
I'm living through it. It's not the first illness that swept the nation, the world. Those are all documented as well as being historic. Hopefully, it's a once-in-a-lifetime event. Which I believe it's now moved from a pandemic to an endemic. So it's now just going to be a way of life and not a way of life, but not a ruler of life, because I feel that the pandemic, the COVID virus, the strategies around it was ruling our lives for a while. I feel that the history of it is that another one came and humanity overtook it. So I definitely feel it's historic in nature. It's going to be in the book.
What do you think those of us in the social sciences and humanities, so people who study things like literature and sociology and political science, what should we be doing right now to better understand the human side of COVID-19?
Continue to do what you're doing. Getting to the core of it, listening, sharing what you're finding, be sure that the information that you're sharing is accurate and correct. Do your research. Be mindful of other people's views and beliefs. And keep yours separate from that. Keep standing your truth, but in your science, let the science be the ruler.
What are some of the things you wish that you had learned more about when you were younger in history?
I would have to say probably if I had to choose, it probably would be politics. How policy and procedure affects everyday life. If I really thought more, what I would have dug in more is to understand the political process and how the policies affect my everyday life.
I'd like you to imagine speaking to a historian in the future, someone far enough away that they have no lived experience of this moment. What would you tell them cannot be forgotten about right now?
Wow. Let's believe that science is based on facts. Science is key. Learn, study, gather your own facts. Follow the science. I'm a firm believer in science.
I want to thank you so, so much for the generosity of your time and the kindness and vulnerability in your answers. Those are all of the questions I know how to ask at this moment, but I'm wondering if there's anything you'd like to say that my questions haven't made room for, please take some space and share it.
At this point, nothing's coming to me. Nothing. Just personally for yourself. Meet people where they're at. Don't expect somebody to react and feel the way you feel. Just meet them where they're at. That's it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.